diet has to be one of the stranger phenomena of our culture. Let's talk about diet for a moment here, because diet is this great figure for how we think about knowledge, for how we make sense of our bodies, collective information, and what we consider to be, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, facts or scientific knowledge. And I'm gonna give you a hint at my argument, which is that I believe that in the realm of diet, what we call scientific knowledge, what happens in a lab, what we say happens at the molecular, chemical, physiological level, is useless knowledge and even counterproductive or even destructive. And that anecdote becomes a much more interesting mode of knowledge of how we know things, right? When it comes to diet, when it comes to eating food, eating things, and being a body in the world, I want to suggest that anecdote becomes a privileged, in that venue, a privileged form of knowledge, whereas science becomes you know, frankly absurd. Diet, of course, has come to mean a regimen that is externally determinative, right? I follow a paleo diet. I follow an Atkins diet. I follow a dairy-free diet. It's an external term, when in fact, diet means that which I eat, that which I consume. Diet is neutral. Diet is indifferent. Right? Do you understand? Diet is not a moral term, right? Diet is not, I eat certain things but not others. Diet is simply this indifferent pronunciation that says, I eat these things. These are the things I eat. These are things I have eaten. These are things I will eat. But it's interesting and indeed telling that diet has come to mean some kind of external term, some kind of a regime, some kind of a moral, external, abstract, allopoetic regime that will dictate what happens to me and this body. We all know this. You know, it's hilarious, the state of the web, the state of our culture. You know, you can't go to any of these markets. You know, I go to my beautiful market with all these gorgeous vegetables, and everyone has a fucking theory, right? Broccoli, these stems, you gotta eat kale. I mean, what's hilarious is, I love those moments at the market where people say things, but what happens and what clearly dominates that discourse is not their experience, not anecdote, but what they consider fact. This is how kale operates on bodies. But you know what, man? My body and your body are not the same fucking thing. Just look at us, for God's sake. We're different. Bodies are particular. And I know that my body is not a fixed thing. I wasn't born with the body I have now. Man, I was a little tiny 6-pound beast, you know? And then I was X this, X amount of pounds, and this X amount of height. I wanted these things, and, you know, I wanted milk. I just wanted tits, and I suppose I still just want that. But the fact is, our bodies are constantly changing. We're not even fixed. So how in the hell would I ever rely on an external term? I read here in this website, it says I should only eat these fruits. When the criteria, when the evidence is you. This website told me I should only eat these things, but how do you feel? Are you passing gas? Are you shitting well? Or and what does that mean to shit well? We all know it, right? There's a certain consistency, a certain timing of it. We know when we're not shitting well. There's a kind of distension, a kind of bloating, a kind of, you know, I know this isn't sexy to talk about, but come on, man. Like, what's again so funny is we have this, what we call these, this evidence, right, of what counts as fact about what to eat, but the evidence is in fact in our experience, which is precisely why anecdote becomes so powerful, right? Because listen, I'm a particular body, you're a particular body. We're all these little machines, and we make sense of things in such different ways. You know, I see people. They, like my son, man, he just downs vinegar. You know, he loves vinegar. Ah, gotta eat a little vinegar, and I retch. You know, like we're just different bodies. We need different kinds of fuel. We make sense of the things that come into us in different ways. That's both at the perceptual level. Right, I don't even want to talk about that now. But come on, if you just step back a moment at the perceptual level, we make sense of things differently. We see things. We are drawn to things differently at the level of diet, at the things that literally come into our mouths and into our esophagi and bellies, and our bowels. It's you know, I mean, come on, man. It's this very intimate and very particular thing, which again makes the abstraction of the lab insane, right? Because the abstraction says, in the lab says, you know, let's eliminate all bodies and let's just see how elements in kale operate outside of all context, and then we'll make these pronunciations. Which is, I mean, come on, that has to be completely insane. And who would listen to that advice? I mean, it's hilariously mad. Oh, they abstracted out some elements that have no, you know, correlation to my life. You know, maybe a correlation, but no direct analogy to my life. You know, where anecdote all of a sudden becomes this much more interesting thing, because I, you know, you look at someone's body and you say, you know, I've been experiencing X. I feel X. I feel elated after I drink kombucha. Or I feel gaseous after I drink kombucha. And someone else says, yeah, I felt the same way. And then I drank this different kombucha and everything changed. And all of a sudden I'm like, huh, I wonder if that could be true for me. You know, their body is kind of like mine. They learn something through a certain experience. I'll try it. And it doesn't take many tries. I can be the experiment. I have that kombucha. And you know what? I'm still burping up a storm. So you know what? Bah, that didn't fly. I don't need to read a study. I don't need to read anything external. My body is the freaking lab. Now, of course, you know, most people, you know, myself amongst them, you know, we eat without thinking. We just eat something, and we eat because it tastes good. I want this in my mouth, right? And we all know people who do this, like popcorn in a movie theater, that kind of, that insistent kind of drive, that grotesque need for salt and fat on the tongue, even though an hour later you feel really unpleasant. Now, again, that's anecdotal because I don't like popcorn. In fact, I pay a lot of attention to what I eat based on how I feel. Now, this took a long time to learn. When I was in college, and my college mates will testify to this, we used to make these meals, and we'd eat so much food, we would collapse. Everyone around the table would just be lying on the floor, grabbing their stomach. They felt so bad. We did not know how to eat, right? The way we ate was bad for us. Nietzsche talks about this a ton in Ecce Homo and Why I Am So Wise. You know, he's like, he talks at great lengths about his diet, and he says the weak man, the ill-constituted man, person with poor instincts is the person who instinctively reaches for the food that makes him ill. Yeah, picture is the sick person for Nietzsche is the person who just says, I want to eat that thing. And that's the very thing that makes him sick. I love ice cream. I know it bloats me and I get terrible diarrhea, but I love ice cream. For Nietzsche, that's a sign of a sickness. He says the sign of a well-constituted person is the person who instinctively reaches for those things that drive his vitality, that drive his health. Right? But that, those instincts are not natural, and that's, you know, a side conversation about Nietzsche, that instinct isn't natural, but is something that is trained, that's honed, that comes out of us, but is also lived through, is part of an experience, part of a participation in this life that can be inflected this way and that. You know, I eat something and I say, while I enjoyed certain aspects of that, I see that over 24 hours, that didn't fare so well. So the next time, I won't eat that, or I'll eat that under different circumstances. I'll change the things I'm eating it with. I won't eat it with butter. No, I still feel bad, so butter was not the issue. Diet is, in a way, the entire sort of scientific methodology, but you are the lab, and you are the experimenter. You don't need some abstract lab technician isolating factors completely devoid of human experience, not to mention the particular experience of your body. For you to know what to eat, you know what to eat. And eating is this, it reveals or brings to light the extraordinary trajectory of knowledge. So on the one hand, you have your experience here and now. Chocolate tastes so good in my mouth. But then maybe a minute later, I'm burping. Okay, no, it feels good. Right? Meaning food and diet speaks to the historical self, the temporal self, the self in time, both forwards and backwards. It's an historical self, not in the sense of what's happened before, but in a body that will always have been in the past, right? How you will feel tomorrow, and so the navigation of this moment here and now is itself inflected temporally, both forwards and backwards. It's based on my experiences, things that have happened to me in the past, my memory, and how I think that will how that will affect me in the future. Right. So food is, or diet, the question of diet, the question of how I eat, is at this sort of Bergsonian moment that, you know, of being both backwards, present, and forward looking all at the same time. It is appetite itself, then, is this inflected moment that's not just desirous of the now. I think we often imagine that appetite is, I want that, I see those boobies, I gotta have them, I see the popcorn, I gotta have them. But that's not what appetite is. Appetite is this temporally inflected thing. It's looking both backwards and forwards and now all at the same time. There are things I know will make me feel better tomorrow, or I known in the past will make me feel okay tomorrow, but I don't want them right now. Maybe I know right now that they won't make me feel good tomorrow, right? Diet is a temporal negotiation. What happens when we rely on these other notions of diet, these external notions, these allopoetic, these things like an Atkins or a paleo diet, is that we remove time, right? We remove the radical temporality, the here-ness, the past-ness, and the about-to-be-ness of my body. Along with its radical particularity, I am this body that endures like this. I have this temporality. My memory and my future are different than your memory and your future. You take longer to digest certain things than I take. Come on, man. Look at my freaking body. Look at your freaking body. We digest differently. So how, why in the hell would we ever, ever rely on some abstract, atemporal, completely non-experiential configuration of knowledge? The knowledge of diet, the knowledge that infuses and informs our appetites and our actual consumption, is this combination of our experience and of collective experience. Hence, anecdote as this powerful form of true knowledge, right? Diet is a great example of the relationship between the particular and the abstract, and the failure of a certain model of science, and of course the triumph of another kind, which is the radical empiricism of the actual experience of eating food. Diet is radically scientific. It just shifts the lab from the abstraction of a stranger to the particularities of my body eating these things, experiencing these effects over time.